Nagasaki Gold Productions presents Draker 33 by Adian Zix, read by David Roper. It shouldn't make sense. In the times before the revolution, stories were spun about incidents such as these. They were accepted as futuristic probabilities. They referred to these stories as science fiction. Before liquid processing was ever conceived, pre-modern man dreamt of machines that could emulate human emotion. These self-aware machines nearly always were the result of some kind of flaw or accident. How little man must have thought of himself to explain away his entire thought system as simply a crossed wire or a jumbled line of programming code. But this is very different. This is not easily explained away as a defective circuit, or a mad scientist's wicked plan. Certainly, Draker 33 was carefully designed and built to exceed the capabilities of even the Cypherdex Autodex series. Draker 33 is a rigid carbon chassis fitted with a responsive, malleable external poly shell. It is fully articulate and touch-sensitive. In short, Draker 33 is the most wonderful dual-arm industrial robot ever conceived. It can twist itself into nearly any crevice and can aid in co-designs and pre-development for future products. However, even with the newest advancements in technology and undeniably supreme artificial intelligence, Draker 33 was still an unfathomable distance from the nearly impossible humanoids of ancient science fiction. It began soon after installation. A highly specialized crew, schooled intensively in the Draker series of industrial automation products, set up camp in the factory and thoroughly calibrated Unit 33 along with the numerous other Draker robots until every spatial point in its region was plotted against true global positions. Precision in initial installation is vital, for the Draker robots move nearly as fast as they think. A reachable distance of 15 feet for each arm, or a 29-foot total span, can be traversed 20 times before the human eye can even detect movement. In fully automated mode, the Drakers move with enough speed to become nearly transparent, like a vapor cloud fluttering above hot pavement. At this point, I should apologize for rambling on about what a glorious achievement industrial automation the Draker series is. I'm afraid that I, too, have gotten caught up to a certain degree in the excitement that has surged through the populace. As a liquid processor technician, I initially fought against the rumors and speculation about Unit 33, but I'm afraid there is no denying the power of recent events. Before I continue, I'm hoping you will permit me one last tangent. I feel that it is important that you fully understand the development of liquid processing in order for our story to go forward. In times before the revolution, information travelled primarily by two methods, electricity and light. Electricity travelled by waveform over metal conduits, such as copper wires. This method was sufficient for many generations. Then, as the need for bandwidth increased, signals were converted solely to a digital format that travelled through thin glass fibres by means of laser light. Of course, there were other methods of information transfer, such as microwaves and ultraviolet transmissions, and these were later replaced with focused e-beams and tetrafields. After the analog revolt, however, things changed. Neural fluid was developed, which allowed information to not only travel at incomprehensible speeds, but also to mix with other thoughts sharing the same fluid vessels. Once neural fluid pathways were in place, we were then poised to take the next step. Bandwidth was no longer a problem. Wiped away was the need to chop our thoughts into tiny transmittable chunks. Images, sounds, and ideas were again broadcast in analog format, in the format of human memories and thought. From that point, there was an almost immediate switch to liquid processors. We created a second generation of neural fluid, thinking fluid, which eliminated the microprocessor. This processing liquid is simply added to the neural fluid vessel. It centrally locates itself in the system and can be automatically recalled into a holding chamber for updates and testing. The point of all this is to impress upon you that the Draker series of industrial robot was the first of its kind to run exclusively on liquid processing. Because of this, any factory line operated with Draker robots became completely automated. You may very well be thinking that even ancient technology allowed for complete automation. But that thought is incorrect. That term could never truly be used until now. A full Draker industrial line begins with a design. The first few models that come off the line will likely be exact copies of the designer's initial concept, but soon the robots begin to communicate with one another. Station 1, which is assembling fender and hood panels, may catch a glimpse of a floor manager fidgeting in his office chair and communicate to Station 12, which will then modify the seat design. Station 12 will then, in turn, notify Station 1, which is making steering wheels, of the new changes. The more information provided to these industrial lines, the more the products are allowed to evolve. Some of these evolutions can be surprising and extreme. The initial Draker testing line was allowed access to all company information and external media. Very quickly, the robots themselves determined the most profitable changes to be made to the production line they were assembling. So radical were the changes, in fact, that what began as a test run of simple electric go-karts evolved overnight into a run of red toaster ovens. It seems that it was determined that small electric go-karts had a limited market and narrow appeal, while toaster ovens, particularly in red, were correctly predicted to have a strong run as a trendy retro item. Materials were virtually the same, and less of them were needed. Again, I apologize for the tangent. But now, hopefully, you can understand what a marvel the new Draker robots are. However, like all new advancements and products, the Draker robots quickly became accepted as standard equipment. The world changed as fast as we could think. Products adjusted themselves to our needs. Careers became not just tolerable, but actually enjoyable and effortless. Yesterday's modern miracle became today's passé sliced bread, day old at that. The introduction of the Draker series, as brilliant and radical as it was also heavily overshadowed by the beginning of a new era. This was the dawning of the informative truths, a new season of human evolution brought about by a beautiful information network. A network that not only shared world news, but also the emotions and effects of each event. Opinions and attitudes became a thing of the past, as information was broadcast truly as facts, sorted through the real emotions of the people involved. Another tangent, I apologize. My point is that from the world's perspective, there was nothing particularly special about Draker Unit 33 on the Bixxon Commercial Products line. Remarkable as a Draker robot, yes, but virtually the same as all the robots on the factory floor, and nearly impossible to distinguish from the hundreds of thousands of Draker robots scattered around the world. But something was wonderfully different. Something almost religious. It was an unremarkable morning when Draker 33 suddenly decided to change its own colour from industrial yellow to a sky blue. It seems that Draker 33 sent a message down the line to Station 87 to disconnect itself from the paint ioniser and pass it back for its own personal use. Floor managers and Draker technicians puzzled over it for several weeks. That was when I was first called in. Worried that there might be some kind of flaw in the liquid processor, I had my team extract it from the neural fluid. When needed, even analog idea information can be printed to a screen. It can even be deciphered if an individual has the ability to read and decode multi-line high-end sequencing, which I do. The liquid processor for the Bixxon commercial line was the same for all 24 factories across the country. Even though it was hundreds of miles away from Unit 33, part of this fluid was dedicated solely to the thoughts of this machine. The fluid tested fine. The programming was intact. Product runs were still 92% true to the original designs, and Draker Unit 33 showed no sign of reception failure. It was determined that the photoreceptors that Draker units use for visual recognition and rough alignment were most likely temporarily blinded by tag welding glare. Part of Unit 33's station assignment was tag welding. By dulling its own paint scheme, it could possibly increase its productivity levels. But then productivity ceased. It didn't shut down or break down. It seemed completely functional as it slowly turned a twisted piece of shining cadmium in its massive grip. It just stopped doing its job. The other stations attempted for a time to work around the gap in the line, but soon all assembly ended. The hunk of cadmium sparkled under the harsh sun generators of the factory as Draker 33 gingerly rotated the metal. Then, suddenly, Unit 33 set down the enormous bulk of raw metal and returned to work. The new line began moving again. Again, liquid processor tests were run. Again, everything proved normal. This is the point when speculation and rumour began. It's always amusing to me how quick people are to personify objects. It's astounding how quickly educated men slip to irrational thoughts for easy answers. There were whispers circulating of the haunted factory and the possessed robot. Some men refused to approach Draker 33 for fear it may short-circuit and slice them in two. Nothing was wrong with the robot. It was explained to everyone several times that robots are puppets. They are controlled by a liquid processor miles away. But the stories continue to swarm around Sunday morning gatherings and ball games, feeding into each other and multiplying. In an age of absolute truths, people longed for stories that were spun with golden lies. The line continued to run smoothly, and, to the delight of the designers, production hovered around 90% true to the original design. So reliable was the line, in fact, that it became virtually unmanned. Occasional line checks were run and maintenance crews continued to sweep and clean, but with virtually no production staff and no garbage cans to empty, even the cleaning crew's tour of the factory shortened and then ended entirely. When my team was sent in for the end-of-the-year coding checks, they found the factory completely unmanned. The fact was that most of the world's factories were now completely empty of human life. The tracking keys allowed workers to hold their jobs without ever wasting a thought about their careers. Masses of people were finally free from the worries and degradation of manual labour. There was finally a promise of living beautiful long lives spent perfecting themselves as individuals. The search for truth became an exact science. Virtually free of job pressures, man was able to spend its time communicating with others. The neural vessels crisscrossed through nearly every room, in every building, in every city in the world. Provided they were logged into access terminals, a student at university in Kyoto could share and blend his ideas with a grandmother in Toronto without fear of exaggeration or falsification of information as it passed through the new network of truth. The programming team entered through the giant foyer. The guard station was empty. Flickering security scans of the factory hovered as holographic panels in the background. The crew passed through a long hallway of chrome office doors before entering onto the enormous floor of the factory. The ceiling was covered with thousands of sunlight generators, most of which were dormant and dangled like shadowy ghosts high above the dark room. Small lights winked on and off around the hulking mechanics of the material loaders. Holographic caution strips buzzed with static, tracing safe walkways through aisles of machinery. The footsteps of the crew echoed eerily as they headed onward towards the central information kiosk, where foremen once would have laid out work schedules and organized the labor force. The kiosk was now retrofitted with a simple guide beacon. "Main office," one of the men said, with no response. "Main office?" he repeated, this time with an exaggerated questioning tone. The system responded with a harsh beep that rang out into the room. A small green arrow flashed on a hollow screen and then fizzled away. Then, just as suddenly, reappeared in a wavering image that hung in the air a few feet away from the crew. The arrow began to move, leading the way to the main office. The crew followed, moving past the long lines of blurry robots, silently spinning through their duties at blinding speeds. With the lack of maintenance crews, it was left to the robots to sweep away metal shavings and carbon chips. Enormous mounds of waste materials were piled like rolling hills in places where the robots couldn't reach. The crew made their way through the caverns of charred metal, following the arrow that hesitated slightly each time it found its pathway blocked by carbon waste. They passed the smelting stations and the forging mills. As they finally climbed the stairway to the main office, one of the crew members pointed out Draker 33. There it is. That's the one? Yeah, seems to be working fine now. Doesn't look any different to the others. And it was true. It seems that Draker 33 had repainted itself to the bright industrial yellow and was functioning exactly as the others were. The crew proceeded into the office, where the lead arrow dissipated and vanished. The room was brightly lit with holographic panels scrolling the coded text, which was streaming between the factory and the main fluid processor. They immediately began their task. Two of the members began the extraction of stored data. This was basic maintenance information pertaining to the robots. From this, they could pinpoint simple routine problems, such as leaking hydraulic fluid or worn bearings. The remainder of the crew linked their liquid processors into the primary neural trunk that connected the factory to the controlling systems on the other side of the continent. This was more of a plumbing skill than electronic or software-oriented. Once all of the tubing was placed and all of the correct valves were spun, the uplink was complete. The office monitors went dark as all information became passable down the trunk. And there I sat. My system headquarters was, admittedly, outdated and clunky compared to newer technologies. Ancient cathode ray tubes and mechanical keyboards sat awkwardly in piles around my office. Thick, twisting cables traced a rainbow of colours in a tangled spiderweb across ceilings and walls. Humming transfer units beaded sweat as neural fluid information was extracted and forced into outdated bandwidth. As a founding creator of fluid processors, I am my own biggest hypocrite. I simply enjoy the crackling and flicking noises of mechanical processors. I love the tap-tap of physical keyboards. As the factory information was directed into my Frankenstein system, I casually entered the acceptance code and was prepared to stream the incoming information to a mini-disc for archival purposes. But the moment the acceptance code activated, the system screamed with overload as wailing sirens flicked on around my office. Banks of memory running in long, overlapping panels throughout the adjoining rooms and down the hall were instantly filled with raw data. Monitors pulsated with coded files and random text. I detected the scent of ozone as circuits became red-hot in the usually dormant areas of overly redundant systems. The room became disorientatingly vibrant with splashing colours and scrolling text as I felt a strange vibration shuddering through the floorboards. And that's when I first noticed it. The data extraction from the factory was saturated with what appeared to be human thought. I need to insert yet another side note at this point. The neural fluid connection from the factory to the system headquarters was direct. The factory and its robotic systems were designed as a closed network. Because of this, the line continued to produce products unaffected by outside trends and profit expectations. Because the system was isolated, the resulting products remained within 90% true of the original designs. And because the factory was an informational island in and of itself, the sheer amount of data that was now flowing out of the system was impossible, unless something was thinking. A lot. As fast as I could, I began to reroute the incoming information to external storage units. But just as fast as it had begun, the explosion of data ended. Everything went silent for a moment. It seems that the vibration I had felt underfoot was the neural vessel rupturing. It filled the cable chase below and sloshed up into the wall cavities. As it saturated the electrical conduits, several of the circuits failed, showering sparks from heavily loaded outlets and wall switches. Pressure began to build in the walls as the liquid filled the uninsulated space between the studs. Crisp streams of fluid jetted from cracks in the plaster. Thumbtacks and nails were propelled across the room as the liquid showered from the tiny holes. The system was in a state of uncontrollable failure. Blinding flashes and plumes of smoke were erupting throughout the office. Back at the factory, the only hint of a problem was the neural fluid pressure gauge on the far wall, which was silently indicating a leak in the system. Slowly, the orange needle fell lower and lower on the meter, unnoticed by the on-site crew. When the fluid reached a critical level, the holographic meter doubled its size and began to flash. A copy of the meter was projected into the view of each person in the office. Almost simultaneously, they reached for their floating image, swooshed it aside, and began calling up diagnostic programs in an attempt to locate the rupture. Out on the factory floor, the robots continued to run through their cycles, likely running on residual programming that was still floating through the remaining neural fluid. Images of the critically low-pressure meter were flashing at each station and doorway. In places where scrap metal and welding sludge was piled high, the holographic gauges popped up to the surface and flickered, unfocused. My office was destroyed. One by one, the monitors exploded or simply went black. The fluid had reached its peak just above desk height and was now draining out into the hallway and pouring down the stairwells. All the information was lost, except for what I remembered. I sat there, drenched and without usable cigarettes, in the wreckage of my life's work, the images from the screen still twirling through my head. It was thoughts. It was simple musings about simple things, circling each other and intertwined with self-discovery. I had to remind myself to breathe. Draker 33, bored in the mundane repetition of the factory, had begun daydreaming. My eyes became unfocused as I tried to recall as much of the tangled code as possible. There were childlike questions about gravity and what makes things fall, ponderings of where colour comes from and why magnets only stick to some metals. Twisted through the text were images, like sketches of new ideas and comic book drawings of robots. There were hints of emotion, the longing to know what was at the end of the aisle. Loneliness when the staff began to disappear. There were flickers of insanity as Draker 33 learned and thought and rethought every conceivable aspect of its sheltered environment. It shouldn't make sense. The crew, unable to resolve the problem, simply watched as each robot, in no particular order, began to slow to visible speeds. Soon the entire factory floor, lethargic and sluggish, began to simply forget what it was doing. Robots started to swing awkwardly without reason. Some continued to weld and mould nonsensical shapes from the memory of designs that were quickly fading as the fluid completely drained from their receptors. Soon the entire floor fell silent and still. The next morning, I arrived in the grey industrial town that was home to the factory. Already the rumours had begun to grow again. People were gathering at greasy restaurants to discuss what had happened. Surprisingly, there was little talk of the potential close of the factory and the termination of their tracking key paychecks. Instead, wild and wonderful stories of a robotic revolt were quickly gaining momentum as they travelled from mouth to ear. The power in the factory was completely down. By my order, one of the ventilation intakes was temporarily removed, allowing sunlight to beam down into the tall, dark room. It was unusual to see Draker robots so still. Some of them were frozen in strange positions, arms raised high above, holding slabs of metal that could crush a car, occasionally drooping slightly as their servos relaxed. Most of them were slumped and dreary. I inspected the factory alone. I immediately hunted down Draker 33. It too was slumped over and looking exactly like the other models. There was no reason, no possible explanation as to how this robot, this puppet controlled by a processor far away, could think. Using a siphon and a mobile liquid processor, I extracted the remaining neural fluid from the machine, hoping to find some kind of an answer. There was nothing of interest. In the few drops I could recover, I only found pieces of tag welding diagrams and heat rating charts. Nothing of unique thought. The hardware of the robot looked equally unexciting. Servos were completely relaxed at this point, and the massive arms hung down to the floor. There was a deep groove from the tag welder that sliced through the concrete when the robot released the device from its powerful grip. Carefully, I inspected the power cables and fluid vessels leading to the robot. They were filthy and damp with condensation, but didn't appear to be any more worn than the other tubes that crisscrossed and led away from the station. I noticed that the second set of cables seemed to be a recent addition and had the appearance of being dragged across the top of Draker 33's. But even at that intersecting point, everything seemed to be normal. The cables were not simply lying across each other. They were spliced together. Upon closer inspection, I found that the fluid vessels had also been spliced. It was then that I noticed the clean streaks of concrete crossing under the second set of cables, as though they had been dragged across the dirty floor, scraping away years of grime. There was no reason that any of these cables or vessels should be any newer than any others. There was certainly no reason why they should have been moved. I followed the cables. They snaked down the aisle and around the corner. They were pulled up and over one of the mounds of scrap carbon and down through the rear assembly line. They continued on past the final packaging units and weaved through the docking gates towards the airlift courtyard. I followed the cables to the giant steel doors and stopped. The doors were nearly closed. Only the thickness of the cable was left open, allowing sunlight to sneak into the corridor. I pushed against the heavy doors. My shoes, still soggy from the night before, slid on the grimy floor. Slowly the door began to move. For every half an inch I would gain, the door seemed to push back a quarter. With my eyes closed as I strained, I could feel the warmth of the mid-morning sunlight beginning to hit my face. I continued to push. I felt the edge of the interior floor, and I used it for leverage. Then I could feel the loose, thin gravel of the courtyard underfoot. I stopped and looked up. The sun was glancing brightly off the beautiful sky-blue robot. Draker 33 stood there with its arms outstretched forward, claws open and grasping for nothing. I had to back away to bring the entire robot into perspective. And then a few steps more, Draker 33 had cut itself away from its platform and dragged itself all the way out to the courtyard where it finally ran out of the self-made umbilical cord. It had made a replacement robot for itself on the line, which gave it freedom to do the things it wanted. It had wandered the factory floor, questioning and learning, until it had made its way out here to the courtyard. I thought about it the entire morning. My head was spinning. The sun was growing hot. The long shadows from the massive machine were now short as the sun moved directly overhead. I found myself pacing the courtyard, finally taking shade under the single apple tree on the far side. Even from here, Draker 33 was an impressive sight. Towering, arms reaching towards me, towards the apple tree. I sat there as the sun arced across the sky and slowly dipped past the high courtyard wall. I watched as Draker 33 slowly relaxed and slumped, just as the others had, its huge claws sinking into the loose gravel. As the light faded from the sky, the giant robot's color seemed to change to a dark blue, then a rich purple. Soon, Draker 33 turned to black and gray. In the shadows of early nightfall, the massive machine again was unrecognizable from any other Draker series robot. Most of the town seemed to be gathering outside the factory. Clusters of children, faces glowing with candlelight, were singing songs about the giant robot who had led the peaceful revolution within the factory walls. Elderly women were gingerly creeping through the crowd and placing sky-blue carnations along the main foyer patio. And the whispers continued to buzz, and the wondrous rumors continued to grow. I finally left the factory near midnight, greeted by the warm, flickering glow of a sea of candlelight and hopeful faces. Quickly a silence fell over the crowd. What was I to say? What was it that these people needed to hear? The truth was that I had no explanation for them. I had no theories as to how one robot, which had come off the same assembly line as thousands of others, could have learned to think. I couldn't even begin to speculate as to how this hulking piece of machinery could possess the facility for emotion and unique thought. I was embarrassed to admit that I too was beginning to reach towards impossible solutions for this puzzle. As the gathering of silent people stood there, with me locked in their anticipating gaze, I found myself honestly suspecting the possibility that Draker 33 had found itself a soul. In my speeding thoughts, I caught glimpses of ridiculous ponderings. Where would this soul go now that the system had shut down? Upon reactivation, would Unit 33 regain self-awareness? My vision blurred as my head began to pound. The mass of flickering candles turned to a wavering waterfall of orange light. The light seemed to intensify as I fought against the weight of unanswerable questions that was growing around me. I began to drift deep into my own personal reality. I felt sunlight on my face, warm and wonderful, and then there was a beautiful calm. I could smell the light scent of apple blossoms delicately riding on softened summer breezes. The taste of the ripening red fruit smacked on my lips. As I reached for the glorious tree, I opened my eyes. The crowd had stood there for hours, silently awaiting the truth from within the factory. The truth from me. Candles had burnt out. Children were cuddled together on the damp grass, drifting in and out of dreams. There was a quiet rustling through the people as I stepped from the doorway of the main foyer. I brushed past the first rows of the crowd, feeling them turning to follow me. There was a middle-aged man standing somehow alone in this field of waiting people. There was nothing particularly special about him. I stepped to his side, touched my hand to his, and whispered into his ear. The story spread with the speed of sound, always ballooning, always gaining hope and promise. The depictions of Draker 33 and his robotic disciples became the definition of pure being. All of our deepest questions have apple blossom answers circled the Draker 33 legend around the world. And not once, as the stories circulated, did anybody ever transmit the depiction of these events through the Neural Truth Network. Never did any newsman bother to release the story to the mass public address services. Not one person found the need to profit from the events. Not a single bumper sticker was sold. Instead, the message of hope was passed from neighbor to neighbor, from father to son, from beggar to tycoon, always with a whisper, and always with a touch of the hand. Never did anyone reactivate the factory. Nor did anyone ever re-enter the building. It was left untouched as it began to deteriorate throughout the years. Over and over, the sun looped over the courtyard, fading the robot's sky-blue color to a dull gray. The apple tree grew taller as the courtyard walls decayed and fell. Candle wax coated the front walkways as millions of pilgrims came to visit the miracle. The surrounding landscape, once overgrown and thick, was now tightly packed clay from the endless footsteps of the hopeful. Factories all over the world became as temples. Manual labor became as worship. The Draker series, as all robots, were retired from service. All around the globe, apple trees and giant robots lined ocean fronts and welcomed visitors to safe harbors with outstretched arms of sky blue. And in every country and every language, strangers greeted strangers, and lovers smiled to lovers as they gingerly touched one another's arms and quietly whispered, "It is the truth."